I'm Dr. John Johnson, the coordinator of the African American Center for Academic Excellence here at HSU. And I want to welcome you all to our event tonight. I want to take a moment to acknowledge and thank our co-sponsors for the event this evening. We are pleased to have the HSU Library, Clubs and Activities, the Humboldt Institute for Interdisciplinary Marijuana Research, and the Department of Critical Race, Gender, and Sexuality Studies as co-sponsors, as well as generous support from the Office of Diversity and Inclusion, and Peer Health Education. So in the wake of recent articles and reports about the marijuana industry in Humboldt County, and with the recreational marijuana referendum on the ballot in the upcoming election, it is timely that we have attorney Mo Spencer here with us tonight to deliver his talk, Smokescreen, Under the Influence of Marijuana Politics and Power. Mo will speak for about an hour and would prefer if questions are reserved until after his presentation. We will have ample time for Q&A with the audience following his presentation, and when we move to the Q&A session, we would ask that students be granted the opportunity to ask questions first, and we would also ask that you remain mindful of the question and answer format. I'll say that again. Be mindful of the question and answer format. So before Callie comes up to introduce our speaker, we wanted to take the opportunity with all these folks here in the room to showcase some student talent we have here at HSU. So please allow me to introduce Angel Silva. Mo's over there a little nervous now. introduce our speaker for the evening. I'm going to bring up Callie from Peer Health Educators.
Hi, I'm Callie from Peer Health Education. I just want to thank all of you for coming out tonight, and thank Mo Spencer for coming to our tiny ass town. All right, so Merwin Mo Spencer is the principal attorney of Spencer Powless Law Office in Everett, Washington. Mo's practice primarily focused on marijuana law and licensing, but Mo also takes cases, flip cases dealing with civil rights issues, protest law, criminal law, defending termination of parental rights, as well as juvenile and restorative justice cases. Mo earned his JD from the University of Oregon School of Law, where he was president of the Black Law Student Association and clerk for the chief presiding judge in the U.S. Federal District Court in Oregon. He obtained his BA from Rice University in Houston, Texas, and has also studied public policy at Oxford University in England. Please join me in welcoming to HSU, Mo Spencer.
You said you smoked marijuana twice, didn't quite work for you. Okay. If you were a Nevada resident, how would you vote?
I suspect I would vote yes.
And I would vote yes because I am seeing in this country too many lives being destroyed for nonviolent offenses. We have a criminal justice system that lets CEOs on Wall Street walk away, and yet we are imprisoning or giving jail sentences to young people who are smoking marijuana. I think we have to think through this war on drugs, which has done an enormous amount of damage. We need to rethink our criminal justice system, and we've got a lot of work to do.
All right. Hello. Because it's a political hot topic. Let's give this a second to get back on. Who said tiny, small ass town? I am excited to be here. My name is Merwin Mo Spencer. I'm an attorney, and I'll step out a lot of times. I normally never use a podium, and then I'll be switching back and forth with the PowerPoint. The PowerPoint is essential. Thank you for inviting me. I've been all around the country, Chattanooga, Tennessee, small towns in Pennsylvania, University of Wisconsin, Old Dominion, University of Idaho. Everywhere I go, I'm blessed to come in and speak about what I do. I am a criminal defense attorney, marijuana attorney, and when it passed in 2012 in Washington State, I said to myself, as I was watching the returns, I am going to do that. And what does that mean? As a marijuana attorney, I represent growers. So if you want to grow in Washington State, you can. You need a license, and I would help you attain that license. I would also counsel you on how to stay within the bounds of state law, Washington, and federal law, the feds. And we're going to be talking about quite a few things. We're going to be talking about feds versus state law. We're going to be talking about licensing. We're going to talk about the history as to why marijuana was illegal, and I think it'll surprise a lot of you. Lastly, we'll talk about the prison industrial complex and how that all ties in together. So I hope you're sitting down, strapped in, and ready to go. I'm an adjunct professor at Edmonds Community College, which is north of Seattle. I taught the first marijuana business and licensing class in history for credit. So I felt pretty good about that. I do have some samples that I brought from Washington State. Just kidding, folks. I ain't got no samples. I saw you looking at me going, yeah, they would put this brother under the jail. So You cannot bring marijuana from state to state through state lines. That was one of the things that Attorney General Holder said in allowing Washington and Colorado to move forward. So sit back and relax. I'll try to speak about 55 minutes and then we'll talk and I'll answer all of your questions. And I'll stay here till the end. But first, let me tell you a story. It's 1973, it's a very warm evening in Washington, D.C. And a young man stepped out of his friend's apartment in Capitol Hill section of D.C. He lit up a joint and he began walking 10-15 minutes home, walk home to his place up on Capitol Hill, for those of you who've been to D.C. Now, he had developed glaucoma in his eye since he was a teen, but he's 23 now, but he was told maybe a month before that he's going to go blind. Glaucoma is going to take his eye. He probably has 6, maybe 7 years, definitely blind by the age of 30. As he walked home, he's puffing away. Okay, and those of you who have bad, I'm nearsighted. I'm blind without my contacts or glasses. And when you don't have your contacts or glasses on, it's just one big blur. And so as he's walking home, he's puffing away, true story, looked up, looked at the street lamp light, and as he was looking at the street lamp light, something amazing happened. It's just one big blob, one big light, but something amazing happened. Anybody want to guess what happened while he's looking at the light? Say it again. It began to come into focus right there, right then, stunned. He was stunned because he's had these bad eyes all of his life, okay? That man was Robert Randall. Nice groovy picture of the 70s, huh? That's Robert Randall. Robert Randall went home and he realized that it's the marijuana that's helping his eyes, his glaucoma. So he went home and he started growing in D.C. in 73. He did that for a couple of years until 1975, and the police, raiding a house next door, looked over in the balcony and saw, ah, there's a day's work. And he got busted. Now, there was a criminal case that came on the heels of that bust. And Randall did something novel. It had never been done in the history of American jurisprudence. We do it all the time now. But nobody had ever done it before. And his defense was medical necessity. Medical necessity. And Robert Randall essentially said, look, I need to smoke this, or else I will go blind. Now, his attorney kind of snickered and laughed. The judge was snickering and laughing. The prosecutor was not happy and was snickering and laughing. In 75, nobody's buying this, okay? So what he ended up doing is telling the court that's what he needed to do, and it would help his eye. So at the very same time that this criminal case is going on, Randall catches wind that across the country in a somewhat of a big state called California at UCLA, guess what they're doing? A study. Guess what kind of study they're doing? Marijuana study. Guess on what type of marijuana study they're doing? On the eyes, the intraocular pressure that marijuana has on the eyes in healing glaucoma. So he hops on a plane. He goes to California. He gets into the program. I don't know if the program consisted of a lot of bike riding or a lot of smoking, but he gets in the program. A couple of months in the program, they wrote a report, and the report was definitive. These are professors and graduates at UCLA. Says, yes, the marijuana is helping his eyesight. Okay? That's Robert Randall with his plans. It is helping his eyesight. He goes back to D.C., and he tells the judge that it's helping his eyesight, and I'm asking the court to recognize this. At the very same time, Randall petitioned the U.S. government with report in hand while the criminal case is still going on in D.C., and he says, look, you're busted me in D.C., I need this to live and to not be blind. UCLA has a report, and the federal government, he asked to petition the federal government, could they give him marijuana? Allow him to smoke it for the U.S. government to provide it. That had never been done before, right? So he's a trailblazer. Two things. that had never been done before, medical necessity, and asking the federal government to give him marijuana to smoke. The federal government said yes. And you're thinking, where does the federal government get marijuana? In Alabama. Sorry, Mississippi. Knew it's in the South. In Mississippi, where they grow it, on a federal licensed marijuana farm that they've been growing since the 60s. And they gave it to him. And Randall Roberts became the first person in American history to receive federal marijuana from the US government. He received it in these silver tins every month. Pre-rolled joints. You can see it. You can see the name right there. How many of you are shocked? This is Humboldt County. I thought you guys knew this. He received it. It was a small program. I think they licensed about 12 or 14. And then they stopped accepting applications. But those 12 or 14 people got it for the rest of their lives. Robert Randall died in 2001, never having gone blind. From 75 to 2001, provided marijuana from the federal government in those silver tins. And certainly he was a trailblazer. Now, medical marijuana, let's say marijuana in and of itself, does have some problems, right? I mean, it has some issues. Let's look at some of the negatives. An altered sense of time, changes in mood, impaired body movement, difficulty thinking and problem solving, and impaired memory and anxiety, okay? This is not all kumbaya and, oh, marijuana is so great. There are some problems, so let's recognize it, okay? But there are some good things as well, right? Glaucoma treatment, which we just talked about. Chronic pain management, muscle spasms, nausea. I know a lot of people who use it for Crohn's disease and a lot of people who use it for multiple sclerosis, okay? So do you throw marijuana out with the bathwater? Okay, well, let me give you an analogy or another idea of looking at it. Penicillin. When penicillin was created, it was in the same boat. It too made people vomit, nausea, anxiety, difference in mood. Oh yeah, and there's one additional thing penicillin can do to you if you're allergic to it. Say it together with me. You can die, okay? You can die with penicillin, right? Do we throw penicillin out with the bathwater? I think you'd be hard-pressed to find any doctor in the Western Hemisphere, the world for that matter, that says we should throw this out with the bathwater because it's so bad, because of all of these dangers. It is the wonder drug of our time. Where would we be without penicillin? Okay? Now, let's move on to something called yellow journalism. And nobody did it better than William Randolph Hearst. And so we're going back. And so why I'm starting with this is because I'm going to slowly take you on to why this became illegal. Hearst is printing in 1911, 1920s. And he's first started printing about marijuana in the teens and in the 20s. And initially, he first linked it with Mexican men and those coming across the border. Pancho Villa was coming across the border with his men, and they brought marijuana with them. Many of you know the song, La Cucaracha, La Cucaracha. That's marijuana. And that song came from Mexican Americans, but specifically Pancho Villa and his wild bandits. You know what Hearst wrote? He says, Mexican men smoke this stuff, get hyped up on it, and then they rape white women. Hello? Yeah, in the newspaper. I wish I had that clipping here, but that's what he said. A year later, he lumped black men into it. Black men smoke this stuff, they get hyped up on it, and they rape white women. Folks, I'm happy to report none of that is true. So I want you to look to your left and look to your right and tell the person, Mexican men, say it, Mexican men and black men, do not smoke this stuff, get hyped up, and rape white women. Thank you. And for that matter, white men or women, Nobody smokes this stuff, gets hyped up and rape white women, red women, yellow women, any women, okay? Green women, Star Trek, okay? So, but this is sensational journalism, and this is what William Randolph Hearst did, and so you first started seeing it in the 20s, and so imagine opening up your newspaper in 1915, 1920, seeing this stuff. I mean, you're literally going to look and say, honey, they're at it again. I mean, look, this is what, and so we slowly started seeing and associating marijuana with men of color and nefarious, okay? And this is a theme you will start seeing over and over again, okay? And he also started printing these ads. Look at this one. Beware, young and old, people in all walks of life. This may be handed to you by the friendly stranger. It contains the killer drug marijuana, a powerful narcotic, murder, insanity, so forth and so on. And you cannot see it here, but I think this was in the 20s. And of course, let's not forget Reefer Madness, right? And also The Devil's Harvest. So these are some of the newsprint that if you go back and look at microfiche, for those of you who remember looking in microfiche, you'll find it. You'll find it there, okay? So these Yentl Journalism's articles, over time, and then the Reefer Madness movie associated marijuana and people of color or smoking it to nefarious purposes. And slowly this started seeping into the mindset of Americans, okay? Henry J. Anslinger, who I don't have in this PowerPoint, but he was the drug czar in the 30s. And when he tried to get marijuana passed or made illegal, and they went to Congress in the dead of night at midnight, many of you had heard that there's a few presidents in the past who have done that to get things passed. He said in the 30s, well, you know, this is what those jazz musicians smoked. And so, again, referring, I mean, jazz musicians in the 30s, I mean, a nice or an improper way to say these are black men that are smoking this, okay, to get this passed. And so you see it slowly started building up. But I'll tell you, as bad as William Randolph Hearst was, I think no one was worse than, let me stop there. I'm going ahead of myself. This is an ad for cocaine. This was in 1915, I think. Folks, don't give your kids cocaine. But you see, when you don't understand a drug, you can actually accidentally prescribe this to your kids. And so, oh, and don't ever be with these two guys. But the reason why I show these two guys is because they represent a culture at the time that was into smoking marijuana, but